guys at the start here. When watching movies and stuff on, like, say, Netflix or whatever, subtitles or no subtitles?
It depends for me. If I'm alone, probably subtitles. My friends are very loud, and I don't think they realize they're very loud. And so that's really the big difference maker. Otherwise, like, it's kind of a 50-50. If I am alone, like, I'll keep them on. Like, if they're on, I don't turn them off.
Yeah. I'm a big subtitles fan. And whenever Shannon and I watch things together, she's like, can we turn these off? I'm like, I mean, I don't want to, but I guess we will.
I am Shannon here. I don't do subtitles. Because, dang, you know why? Because I get caught up reading, and I miss things in the movie, and I also get ahead of what they're saying. It's like, I don't know. I might as well read a book instead of watching this movie.
So I have found that that goes away with practice. So you have to just keep the subtitles on at all times, and eventually you'll strike a good balance with yourself, like, subconsciously.
Subtitles is for anime and foreign films.
I mean, I can... it's a requirement, really, for me.
That's my stance. But I will say, I'll turn them on if, like Alex said, if, like, there's a lot of people talking, and I'm just like, no, I'm not going to deal with it. I'll just turn on the subtitles, just in case I miss it. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I have a really hard time understanding Mads Mikkelsen. So
that was strangely specific. So
generally, you are not subtitles. However, unless Mad Mikkelsen,
I have actors, and he's the first one that came to mind that subtitles were necessary for.
Chris has a list of actors that speak in cursive.
Yeah. Google Doc somewhere listed.
Oh my God.
That's
amazing.
Okay, so your stance is no subtitles unless Mads Mikkelsen is in the piece, then subtitles.
Right. It's okay. Like a special case. There's like an asterisk by his name in all movies he's in.
We're going to have to look ahead at all of the movies we want to watch just to make sure that Mads isn't in any of them.
Yeah. Well, hey, if they ever do the Death Stranding movie.
I mean, there will be like four things of dialogue in that movie anyway, so I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, just a lot of moving through to... empty space. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. We're slowly learning more about the hosts of the Drop Frames podcast at the beginning of each of these episodes. That's just something I want to throw in for the listener. But welcome to Drop Frames. What is our thing again? Does anyone else know it offhand? I'm not looking at the doc.
Something 60 frames to 24, baby. Got it.
That's word for word. Wow.
He's got it.
Can't believe how correct that was. Let's just move on because it was so accurate and we don't need to revisit it.
I'm fine with it. I'm Josh. Chris is here. Alec is here with that amazing introduction. And we're talking about Assassin's Creed today, the movie from 2016. Based on our pre-record talks, I'm excited to get into this. I feel like this is going to be the most divided we've been so far in the recording of this podcast, so let's get right into it. Let's talk about who is involved. Directed by Justin Kurzel, starring in my, I think, the most star-studded cast we've covered so far: Michael Fassbender,
oh yeah, by far,
Marion Cotillard, Jeremy Irons, Brendan Gleeson, and Michael K. Williams, and written by Michael Leslie, Adam Cooper, and Bill College. What'd you guys think of the cast?
Honestly, it's a great cast. Like, yeah. I really don't see a fault in any of those people, particularly, like, I'm a big Michael K. Williams guy. I love that man. I think he does no wrong.
Awesome. Yeah. Did you watch the HBO show? The
Lovecraft Country?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I had actually read the book like a year prior to it coming out, so I was really interested in it. But a conversation for another time. Chris, what did you think of the cast?
Like you said, the cast is probably the most star-studded one that we've done. In fact, maybe the top three or four actors in this movie are probably more famous than any of the actors that we've covered in the previous movies.
Jim Carrey, I feel like, is the most famous actor. I feel like I missed
you and your Jim Carrey.
I mean, you can't forget him. and you certainly can't forget James Marsden.
Oh, that's true. That's right. I forgot we were on that hill.
Yeah.
I will say I love this cast, and a lot of these people have done some amazing work, which I think would lead into some of our conversation as to perhaps
what went wrong. How they,
what happened?
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it. We will also say that this was originally planned as a trilogy. I think that's obvious at the end of the movie here. However, when Disney acquired Fox and with it the rights to this franchise, they pretty quickly went ahead and said, we're not gonna do that. So it was canceled. However, the production on the second one was already underway. It had actually started before they even finished filming the original, this movie. So a lot of work down the drain there, but not necessarily hard to see why that decision was made. So we will not be seeing Michael Fassbender again in the Assassin's Creed franchise.
just ever again. Well, we'll be seeing Michael Fassbender
have
ever
we
again.
Seen him since? I guess he's in another big Fox property. That
so he's in Dark Phoenix, right?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what they're doing with that either. So
I haven't seen Dark Phoenix, so I wasn't actually sure if he's around in the movie, but
he may not be.
He's there.
Okay.
Also, Jeremy Irons is the king of giving me the movie I almost wanted. Like, I guess, or almost giving me the movie I wanted is the better way to say that. But like, I'm still just deeply personally stung by the Aragon movie in 2006 or 7, whenever that was.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just that one cut deep. Once they bungled that one, I was like, damn, they wasted Jeremy Irons in one of his best roles. And then we get to Assassin's Creed. And I was like, hey, hold on. This sounds exciting. Mm-hmm. And then I walked out of this one like, damn, they wasted Jeremy Irons again.
Yeah. Is it weird to say that Jeremy Irons' best role for me is in the Watchmen series recently?
Oh, yeah, absolutely incredible.
It's so good.
I thought you were going to go with Scar in Lion King, but
it's a close second. I think a lot can be said about how great this cast is usually. Not necessarily here, but just, I mean, we could go on about all of these actors. Michael Fassbender, I loved him in the Steve Jobs movie, not just because I worked on that set, actually. A little tidbit about me. So I've met him in person briefly. Cool guy.
See, what you're saying is you're best friends with Michael Fassbender.
Well, you know, I hit him up about, you know, guesting on this episode. He was busy.
James Marsden's going to be pissed that he didn't get an invite to the Sonic one.
No way, please, James.
Can I do a quick, like, video game tie-in? It's kind of strange. I'm on Michael Fassbender's IMDb, and I guess he was a voice in the game Fable 3.
What?
Yeah, crazy, right? You didn't talk to Michael about this?
He never mentioned it.
No. He's a humble guy, I would assume.
Wow, that's
never met him, by the way.
Another interesting video game tie-in thing. Actually, Michael K. Williams' character is the only character from an Assassin's Creed game in this movie.
Oh, interesting.
He's from one of the side Assassin's Creed game. I think it was Liberation. So his character is pulled from that. But other than that, everyone else is an original character for this movie. Let me run down briefly a synopsis here. On the day of his supposed execution, Callum Lynch is apprehended by Sophia and the Abstergo Foundation and tasked with finding the location of the Apple of Eden, an artifact believed to contain the code to control free will. Under the supervision of Sophia and her father, Callum must use the Animus machine to revisit his ancestors' memories to uncover the Apple's location and reignite the age-old war between the Assassins and the Templars. Premise for this movie, honestly, I think is really compelling. I think that there is so much here that could have been done really well, and it was kind of a missed opportunity. There were just some missteps along the way, because I think that's really good. Obviously, we've talked about the cast, and there was a lot about this idea that I really liked. What did you guys think of this? Alec, what did you think?
I think the premise is the best part of the movie. Like, as you start getting into the story, I liked what we were doing. It's just that the specific choices we made along the way didn't play as well as just the wider premise of the story, unfortunately.
Yeah. Chris, what did you think?
Like what Alex said, it was an interesting through the movie, I was thinking, you know, in the very beginning anyway, I knew what the reviews were like. Yeah, I usually don't. I try to stay away from them, but it's hard with what we're trying to do with this podcast. So yeah. I was trying to see what the consensus was. And the first instances of the movie, I was like, well, this movie's not that bad. Like, this action sequence is kind of cool. I know a little bit about Assassin's Creed, so this is kind of cool. And then as the movie goes on, you're like, oh, this is kind of it's a little bit of a drag throughout. And I was trying to think what happened, maybe perhaps, because like what you said, Josh, the movie concept itself, I feel like, is not a terrible idea. So where does that go wrong? Is that in editing? Is that in post-production? Because I'm curious to see if there was a more full-fledged idea, a more fleshed out idea that we didn't see, and we just got bits and pieces of a failure.
Yeah, I have thoughts about that. And actually, the first one is within the first 30 minutes or so of the movie, I'm like thinking about it and I'm like, I don't know who Callum is.
Right.
I know almost nothing about this lead character that we're supposed to like. Like, I think there's a lot of characterization issues, and I think there's a lot, I think it's all just in the pacing and the writing. Like, we never get to know him on a level where it's like, this is his worldview, because it's very much about this, like, do we take people's free will away to end violence, basically? And he, the first piece of characterization we get is, he's having the conversation with Sophia, and she says to him, you're being aggressive. And he says, I'm an aggressive person. And then they continue their conversation, and then he says, I'm hungry. And I'm like, okay, so Callum is aggressive and he's hungry. These are the things I know about him right now. And right. That's basically the extent of it.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I was thinking through the movie, they spent a little bit of time trying to tell us who Callum is, supposed murderer, a little cuckoo. He has drawings on his wall of, you know, the whatever those were, the faces of, were we presuming that those were the faces of his past selves, which they never explained?
Yeah, I think that was another thing that they kind of tried to force through that never landed. I was like, okay, so right. He's kind of losing it a little bit. He's like singing at one point, like as they're
right,
putting
right. he went like they asked him to go half crazy.
Yeah. I think.
But what the weird thing to me was, they built up this character that is a little strange, a little crazy, and then the flip of the movie is like, we're kind of getting towards the end here, but the flip of the movie was like, oh yeah, by the way, you're part of a line of assassins, and like his mental psyche just clicks, like yeah. He just gets it. That was a weird transition for me.
Yeah, I think they tried to make a little bit of it like, this is what's happening to him as a result of the visions he's seeing and like having gone into the Animus as well. But, and then like at some point when he's like fully synchronized with it, then it's like, okay, like I understand who I am or whatever it is. But yeah, it never fully got fleshed out and developed enough to where it worked seamlessly for me.
Yeah. I think we hit a period in the movie where they really want you to believe this world so badly that they're not like zooming out enough. Like inside the bubble, you're like, ah, yes, this all makes sense. He's been in and out of these experiences. He's had all this like predecessor, lineal knowledge, whatever they call it in the movie, that like they just expect the audience to be along with them at that point. And I'm like, you're still selling us. Like you still need to land this. And I think they just kind of took that for granted.
That's interesting. I like that. That says to me that there's a lot of footnotes in the characters' bios that the actors got that we just don't know about, and yes. They're trying to sell it to us.
Yeah, that's why I think there's such a seed of something great here, and to actually see them continue with the trilogy, I think would have been really benefited this movie as well. Just like in hindsight, like learning more about what's really going on here, because I feel like a lot was left on the cutting room floor here. Because I, and this is where I feel like I'm gonna differ from you. And this is another situation of, while there's clearly a lot of missteps here, I really enjoyed watching this movie. As kind of wacky as some of the pieces were, I think overall, as a whole, it was pretty good. Definitely not my favorite of the movies we've watched, but, you know, better than the 18% Rotten Tomatoes that it got.
Yeah, I think for me, I have this duality, really, about myself, where sometimes I can be harsh on movies that other people really, really like, and just stylistically they don't work for me, but also in video game movies that aren't very good, I'm like, 5 stars, masterpiece, yeah. Love it. And I think this is another one of those times where maybe I just wasn't taking it as seriously as some people, or having played the games and really enjoying those, I was just more ready to like it, because I don't think it's bad. Like, I enjoy watching it. I've seen it twice now.
Yeah. I mean, you look at this cast and you're like, what went wrong? Like, how did this not sell well? Right, it was considered a flop when it released, did not make its money back until much later, and with the overseas box office, but in the US stateside, it did not do as well as they had hoped. Ubisoft wanted to be intimately involved with the production here because they wanted to do it right. That was something that was specifically part of the marketing, was that, like, Michael Fassbender is teaming up with the studio that makes the game to make this movie together. Like, someone from the acting world who is really trusted at the time, was like probably at his peak as an actor, and the actual studio that is making this popular video game franchise, which is not something that is typically done when making these films, these adaptations. And bringing those two elements together, they want to really make it, they want to really do it right. They have this all-star cast, and something just went wrong. Now it's canceled.
Yeah, I remember seeing someone describing this movie as if a Dan Brown novel had added parkour.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. And I think that's what my brain was like chewing on. I was like, ah, yes, I don't need to think about this. The movie will tell me what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm just into watching this guy jump off of this very, very big building, which was a practical thing. They really had those stuntmen out there jumping off of the tallest towers of like the last 35 or 40 years.
Yeah, I saw that it was like one of the longest free falls in like 30 years of movie history or something, like, to that point. That's pretty yeah. Cool. I'm glad that they, I don't know that I'm glad that they did that, but it's cool that they did that.
I've watched the behind the scenes of that first big leap of faith, and it's the coolest. Like, I have a terrifying fear of heights at that level. Like, I can go up, you know, 15, 20 feet in the air, I'm fine. Uh-huh. But, like, being up that high, I was born in Virginia, and there are a couple of mountains where you can just kind of walk on top of the areas of the peak and look down and see down that far.
Uh-huh.
And, that just traumatized me as a kid. So seeing other people just freely up there like it's nothing, living through them vicariously is my only option, and I love doing it.
Yeah, good for them. And speaking of the leap of faith, it is called a leap of faith in this movie, as referenced by Sophia, when Callum actually does the leap of faith, when he's, and this is another moment that I don't think lands in the way that they want to, but this is supposed to be like
the leap of faith doesn't land.
Okay.
That would be very unfortunate.
This is supposed to, like, signify that he's, like, okay, he's, like, fully synced up now with his ancestor, and this is, like, a real turning point for him. That's another thing, too. He's not actually going through any growth in this movie. It's just, like, is he eventually gonna be sync up with this machine? And then he does, and then he does the leap of faith, which Sophia says, the leap of faith. What is a leap of faith in this universe that there's a name for it? Why would there be a name for it?
I don't know.
What a capital name L, capital F leap of faith.
The leap of faith is pretty iconic in the Assassin's Creed game,
right?
Especially in the first one, where you didn't really get, before, you know, before Assassin's Creed came out, all the sandbox games, you didn't really get the idea of being in like the scenic area, and then the camera pans around, and then there's an actual action to jump off, and you get that first, you know, rush feeling in that game. But then everything, all the leaps after that are like stale, right? But
yeah,
but the yeah, there was no. I feel like that moment when she says the leap of faith, which actually I think is probably the second one he does. Because
the first one he botches, doesn't he?
Is that what he does?
He desyncs halfway through, and yeah, then they have to pull him out.
So an unsuccessful leap of faith,
right?
Doesn't warrant.
That's why this is his growth moment, because he did it right this time.
Right.
It's a physical growth, not a emotional or important growth.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, it doesn't carry that weight. I understand it. I think the problem that I have with her saying, oh, the leap of faith, is that line only exists to like get a pop from gamers at a midnight screening of this movie.
Yeah. Well, it's an unearned title, right? Like, there's no buildup, and we're just supposed to be like, oh yeah, of course, the leap of faith.
Yeah.
Unless they've just been forcing people into the Animus and being like, hey, jump off of that thing.
I mean, they have been forcing people into the Animus. That is part of this movie.
For sure. But like, I wonder how many people they were like, oh, well, he's not going to stick it. Just let him die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Save the good line for the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But save the good line for when we're recording. Yeah. Just moments like that where it's like, just this underdeveloped through line here of like, oh, he kept in sync for the leap of faith, that means he's better person now, he's joined the he doesn't actually even, I don't think he even knows that the other people in there are also part of the Assassin's Brotherhood until he comes out of that, having completed this transformation, and they've already right. started the rebellion. And then he's like, oh, they're all fighting to get out of here, I guess I'll join them now. He never shows any camaraderie with them before right. that.
He evolves from what they call him, pioneer to yeah. assassin.
Yes. And they all have their little nicknames given to him by Michael K. Williams.
Oh yeah. I do what you were saying earlier at the top of the podcast, Josh, when you were saying that Musa or Michael K. Williams' character is the only one who's a returning character from like the outside of the movie franchise.
Right.
Towards the end, we do see Arno from Assassin's Creed Unity in that like lineup of assassins that Callum is like descended from.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the only other one that I can think of. And that was also something that let me down a little bit. I was hoping we'd get a more direct tie-in to the games. Like I was hoping that with the movie, they might push something forward, but really it seems more disconnected than any of the games really are. Apart from each other than maybe the reset that happened after like Assassin's Creed 3,
yeah,
where we kind of started to separate off. It seemed like the movie kind of existed in its own bubble, which I understand if the movie is being produced kind of off to the side and the studios are not like cooperating on it, but it seemed like Ubisoft was really in on this movie and like really active in helping develop it and working with the studio to produce it. So that part just confused me even more. The first time I watched it, I was like, well, that if you weren't going to have a great story payoff for the ending of the movie, like I would at least hope it does something for the series, but it kind of just falls flat.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do understand why they kind of wanted to take it in that direction, especially considering, like we said, the concept is very strong and wanting to kind of not be tied down into trying to tie this into anything, use characters that already have a history and lore that you know about, right? And that obviously people who are big fans of the franchise are going to be able to pick apart. So keeping it separate like that while going with this concept, I get. It's just that the things that they did tie into it, like you said, like I'm not familiar with the reference, but from Unity, and then for the one character to be from Liberation, which I think was like, isn't that the like Vita one?
Yeah, I think it's like the handheld or mobile game, yeah, or whatever.
So like, okay, you're taking from these from that like much lesser known game, and then I know Unity is like technically a mainline Assassin's Creed, but that is actually one of the ones I didn't play. play, although I am a big fan of the franchise, especially the newer games. I think are really, really good since they started becoming really the open world kind of RPG game. I really like those ones a lot. But yeah, it's just it's like we've been kind of echoing here, could have been so good. And I think seeing the second and third installments here would have done a lot for this franchise and could have been exciting and good. But unfortunately, this is all we have now. And Marion Cotillard would have been like the main villain of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think so, that could have worked out really well.
Yeah.
I saw that in your notes, but like, what? So I had a couple questions from this movie.
Yeah, go ahead. But
so she sees herself, right? When Callum sees all of the assassins, like his ancestors or whatever.
Yeah, they leave like a question mark at the end, like that was going to be tied up eventually. I was actually interested in that.
Right. So I saw that right? She saw herself in a hood, which...
Yeah, they basically...
She was either an assassin or... Maybe it's what is she?
Well, they are, their family are Templars, but it's may have some assassin blood in her. They're kind of teasing,
right?
So she, and that's kind of the start of her switch to like, what is happening here? But ultimately, her heel turn is very much unearned, I think, in where. You know, he says, you don't get to walk away from this. She wants to be good at the end. But then all it took was Callum killing her father. And then she's like, nope, I'm bad now again. And that was it.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I got that. I don't know if I got that she's just all of a sudden bad. But I could see where you're going with it.
I think she kind of is playing that middle line where she's been stuck in this Templar environment for so long, and that we see her start to question a little bit of what's happening and like what is it Alan? Is that what her dad's name was?
Alan Rickman.
Not to be confused with Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
I think we do see like her becoming a little bit aware of how he's playing this game throughout the movie. You know, that plays like kind of her early, you know, through line. That's kind of what she's doing in the movie. And then yeah, at the end when they're chasing down to all places the Columbus burial vault, which was another weird place I think for the movie to go, but it's fine.
It's a very, especially because it really plays him as like the hero who saved the assassin, the whole reason the assassins exist, like this at this apple, and it's like, we're gonna give it to Christopher Columbus and he's gonna take it to his grave, ending the fight for it, preserving free will.
Yeah, not the choice that I would have made in 2015, 16, whenever the movie came out. We got a little bit National Treasury there, and I don't love that.
Okay, so I'm
gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
I also thought of the National Treasure like comparison here, and they just go get it. Like, they're like, it's buried with Christopher Columbus, and they're like, okay, let's go get it. And then they do, they just have it. They are able to access Christopher Columbus's grave and get this thing just because.
I mean, I'm sure with whatever money and influence that Abstergo have, like, that could probably happen in today's world.
Yeah, they did mention that they are getting $3 billion in government funding per year.
And what was the one like older Templar who's like, we can shut this thing down now, we've already won, and Alan's like, no, we need to keep going, and it's like, well, do you really? Like,
yeah
I think you're good, man. But it is a little strange that they get there and Sophia's just like, yeah, go ahead, go for the thing, and then just strictly because Cal has to kill Alan, he's like, or she kind of turns a full 180 and is like, oh, I hate the assassins again, even though I think I am one, but I still hate them, and I don't, huh. Anyway, time to go kill Cal. And it's like, okay. I'm not certain how we landed here, but I, like you were saying earlier, I think two more movies could have maybe fixed that, maybe put us on the right trajectory and given her a full fleshed out storyline, but this movie did not really do Sophia justice in that regard.
Yeah, it's not to say that I'm not interested in where that would have gone, but I think, like, you know, you've got this cast, you've got this setup, and moving forward with it, I think, would have been fun to continue watching.
Yeah, I disagree. I feel like trilogies need to be earned. They can't be set up for, I feel like, because you can't botch a movie, and not that we're making excuses for it, but and kind of put it on a different pedestal because it was planned for a trilogy. I think a movie needs to be self-encompassing just as much as it's setting up for the next two. We can't have like a third of a slice of something. It needs to be earned that you get the next two, because if we get a crappy movie and then they're like, oh, wait for the next one. It's like, no, I already sat through your crappy one. I'm not going to fund the next one. But I do want to traverse back to a couple things. The Columbus thing I feel like was supposed to be a bigger payoff, but because the movie was already so mediocre by that, I think that the Christopher Columbus thing was just like, oh, okay, so they're tying real history into it. I get it. But I think if the movie was a little bit more fun and interesting up to that point, I think us as the audience would have been like, oh, wow, like this is what Assassin's Creed is about, like tying some real history stuff into the lore of Assassin's Creed. I think that would have been a much, much, much bigger payoff. And then I also want to note, we haven't really talked about it up until maybe the last leg of the movie. We weren't really sure what the Apple of Eden was. We weren't really sure.
They say it in a text scroll in the beginning.
Yeah, but like we had no context of if this was real magic or if it was like a symbol of power.
Right, you know? Right. They just say it is believed that that is what this will do, but it's never actually like confirmed.
And I don't think up till then we had any inkling of any type of supernatural stuff going on, because, you know, the animus and all that stuff could be justified by science and whatnot. But it wasn't until that last like push where it looked like they're trying to activate the apple, it got a little supernatural, a little magic-y, and I was like, oh, we're taking a turn here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Assassin's Creed is known to delve into that, but yeah, it is all of this work, $3 billion in funding a year for the belief that maybe this is what this does.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little far-fetched.
I do think there was some leaning into the game that happened here, where the writers were like, people know what Assassin's Creed is. They'll understand these little, you know, things. If we bring up the Apple of Eden, they'll get it. They'll know this is what these games are about. And then probably for the average moviegoer, I could see how they sat there at the end, like, I have no idea what I just watched. And that circle thing made no fucking sense.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Chris, as far as like, yeah, earn the sequel, earn the trilogy, right? And this movie, it makes a lot of mistakes on those grounds. However, there are things for me personally that I'm like, okay, where's this thread leading? Like, where is Marion Cotillard seeing her ancestors as an assassin? What does that mean? Like these questions that are left here, I think there's enough for me there to continue watching this. But I definitely get that, like, this movie in particular was a little mishandled. It was probably a little bit due to maybe Ubisoft's inexperience in this was their first production with the Ubisoft studios, which has since basically just made a bunch of like rabid shorts. And they do have a lot of other movies planned, though, within like their properties to come out of the studio. So we'll see what happens with those. But yeah, I do agree that this movie makes a lot of missteps, but there is some stuff for me there that I would have been interested in seeing.
And I'll say, to Chris's point about earning a sequel, or particularly writing a movie specifically to set up a sequel, I think Mortal Kombat this year did that as well. But in a way that the audience knows that the Mortal Kombat movies aren't going to be these like uber serious, like trying to sell you on the drama of the world. And it's more about the fighting and the powers and all of the weird bracelets. Humor and bracelets, for sure. Bracelets. Yeah. And then gore and fatalities, like they know the appeal of those movies. So with this year's Mortal Kombat kind of being a precursor to a Mortal Kombat tournament movie, I think there is a way that you can do that, where you write a movie specifically to set up the big event. That, I think, is a reasonable path to take for some movies, but in a more serious tone, I think you really have to stick it for that to be the plan. You really have to nail the first movie and earn it, like you were saying. Versus like Mortal Kombat, critically, I don't think it did that well. I haven't looked at the reviews of it, but I think audiences knew what they were getting into. So when they came into it, either they loved it or they realized like, man, this just works better in the video game and I don't care too much about the movie, and kind of moved on from it. Where Assassin's Creed was sold as this like big adventure, summer blockbuster kind of style of movie. And I think it released in like the prime holiday window too. I know it was December 16th.
Yep.
So that should have been, I can't remember a big movie in, what did Rogue One come out that year? Yeah, I think that was 2016, because Last Jedi was the next year. So that would have been the only big competition, I would think. And it clearly still didn't perform. So I do think there's a lesson to be learned. As we were talking about, I don't remember if that was in the Sonic episode or which one it was that we were talking about, knowing your audience and what you're doing with these movies, like who you're selling them to.
Yeah.
But I definitely think we've got a good example of how not to do it with this movie.
That's interesting. I like those points. We haven't really talked about, we probably should do like a bigger, broader idea cast regarding the space of video game movies. But the idea of what you were saying, Alec, of like people's knowledge precursing the movie's release or seeing them, and on top of that knowledge, their expectation of what of that video game franchise universe has to offer, in Mortal Kombat's case, like I think the setup that WB did and the funding that they put towards in that movie, i.e. the fighting and some of the more campier stuff, I think worked because of what people know about Mortal Kombat and what are interested in Mortal Kombat. Whereas in the space of Assassin's Creed, it's kind of an unearned publicly known IP. You know, I think that's much more inside baseball for the video game people. Whereas Mortal Kombat, you know, is a 90s thing, so a lot more people know about it. So with a movie like Assassin's Creed, you kind of have to paint a picture for a lot more people and try to sell them on the idea of what Assassin's Creed is. Rather than Mortal Kombat, you can come in kind of cold and know exactly what you're going to get in. You're going to get in the movie.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a huge expectation difference, because just the way that the movies would sell themselves is Assassin's Creed, it takes a lot to keep up with the franchise. Like, they are a very largely like historic based, you know, series. You have to know the history or the time that you're in to appreciate a lot of the stuff that's happening in those games. And something like Mortal Kombat just doesn't have that restriction. You can kind of just, hey, you guys remember those blue and yellow guys that were fighting each other in the 90s that everyone's kids used to love? Here's, you know, 120 minutes of that. Have fun.
And like basically invented like the ESRP rating because of how bloody it was.
Remember that time when government entity nearly collapsed because of a video game?
Yeah, yes. That was this one. It's back, baby. Yeah, and I think there's also, I think Ubisoft themselves even shot themselves in the foot a little bit by marketing this as, we want to get this right. We have hired an all-star cast of actors. We are getting into the filmmaking business. This is going to be like if a video game movie was good, like The Dark Knight was like this transcendent superhero movie at the time. Like,
yeah,
Oscar-nominated superhero movie. This is what Assassin's Creed is going to be now. And, you know, it has this all-star cast. You can see it. I think it's well shot. It looks good. And then you go into that with that expectation, and it's just not that. And, you know, that it falls completely flat of that.
Really unfortunate.
Yeah, unfortunate. But, you know, that is now the legacy of the Assassin's Creed movie franchise. One day in centuries from now, there will be an Assassin's Creed game about this time and they'll meet Michael Fassbender, and they'll go through the history of the movie, that the franchise that never was.
And hopefully they'll review this podcast in the process, making us officially a part of the Assassin's Creed canon.
Whoa. Hey, yeah, we could all be part of Assassin's Creed, just have to wait long enough.
And then we too could be confused by seeing ourselves in some kind of assassin projection at the end of our own movie.
Whoa, I wonder who they would get to play me.
Michael Fassbender.
He's still around, but I'm not.
James Marsden.
The three actors that would play us would be James Marsden, Michael Fassbender, and Mila Jovovich.
Mm. Ooh.
That's the dream casting for the Drop Frames movie.
Whoever's Mila Jovovich gets to thumbs up, thumbs down the ideas for the podcast.
Yeah, co-writer. Chris, what are your final thoughts on Assassin's Creed 2016?
Oh, final thoughts. Okay. I think we kind of got spoiled, well, at least in my view, of the first three movies. Mm-hmm. Two of them newer with Sonic and Mortal Kombat and Resident Evil a little older, but I think those are three movies that the three of us thoroughly enjoyed to various extents. This one was interesting because I did not enjoy it. It missed on a lot of fronts. Like we said before, I feel like it was ambitious, but in probably the wrong ways. I think it was trying to set up for a trilogy that potentially they would have never gotten with you know what happened in this movie. I think the cast was great. They probably tried to do their best with what they had. But like we said before, I think something probably went awry in post-production or editing, because it feels almost too incomplete even for a movie expecting a trilogy. I still love Michael Fassbender, even after watching this.
I'm glad
I thought
it didn't ruin him for you.
No, it didn't. It didn't. Just a blemish on his excellent resume. The video game stuff in this movie was cool. I thought when we went into the Animus and we got the assassin parts, where we got into these fight scenes, and it always started with them, you know, catching the enemy by surprise. I thought that was really cool. A lot of unearned things though as well, like you said, Josh, the title of Leap of Faith, when she just blatantly called it out, and then the end where I guess our villain who was on the fence just flips at the very end. It was very interesting, but overall I didn't love this movie, but it's okay because I feel like there's going to be a lot of that in our video game.
Yeah, get used to bad movies.
But at least we have a spectrum now, right? We have good ones, and we have the ones that are a little out there. So, yeah.
All right, Alec, what'd you think?
I'm fairly in the middle on this movie. I think that sometimes you get a movie that is greater than the sum of its parts, and this is one time where I think the opposite is true, that all of the little individual parts of the movie are very good. It just didn't fit a good picture together. Like, I love, like you were saying earlier, it shot very well. I think the early stuff with in Andalusia on the opening of the movie, like, I think all of that stuff looks great. The actors, great. I really wanted to love it, to be honest, but there is something with the writing, whether it was cut scenes or they just hurried through stuff in the actual script, I don't know. So it comes out to like a 2.5 out of 5 stars probably, and that might be being generous, but I do have fun watching it. Like I said, it's not super quality, but it is enough like mind candy that I could put it on again today and not mind watching it.
Real quick, Alec, I like what you said there. I wanted to love it because I think that's where I was too. I really wanted this movie to be something I loved. It probably didn't help in my review.
It just added a sharper edge that by the end,
yeah,
I've done a full 180. Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about, like, you look at the cast and everything, and you're like, okay, well, how bad could this actually be? Is this just like the critics who don't understand the video game movie, you know? But yeah, I think it is about like I think I liked it the most out of all of us, and overall, I think my thoughts are that, like, a lot of potential here, and I think what you said is correct, Chris, overly ambitious. They went into this and marketed this as much more than it should have been. Should have been a setup for the trilogy and a fun Assassin's Creed movie. with a great cast of actors. You know, keep them, because I think the performances in this are really good. Michael Fassbender, even if a lot of his character moments were either non-existent or not very good, he still did a great job. Marion Cotillard as well. You know, not enough good things can be said about the cast and, of course, their work previous to this movie. It was just a case of bad characterization and just like a pacing issue and just motivation. Too many things went wrong for this to fully be what it could have been, because I do think the premise was really good. I definitely lean closer to having liked this movie, but I do think it is my least favorite movie that we've covered so far. There were a couple of racial insensitivity things that we didn't get into that I kind of was like, is Michael Fassbender supposed to be Mexican? It's kind of unclear. and I think maybe better left keeping it unclear. So that was another gripe I had with the movie. But other than that, I had a fun time, and I do wish that they had a chance to kind of flesh out these characters and this world more, but we will never see that. And that's it for Assassin's Creed so far with the way in the movie world. Well, that was a fun one, guys. Thank you as always for joining me. We will be back in 2 weeks, and we have an exciting episode next time. We will be covering our first series, and that will be the first season of Castlevania, the Netflix animated series. I actually just looked at it today. It's 4 episodes, so easy.
Yeah, and they're pretty short. It's pretty easy homework.
It's like a 30-minute episodes. So yeah, if you want to keep up with that, make sure you watch those 4 episodes of the first season like we are going to do, and we'll meet back right here. Same place, same time. What do you guys say?
Sounds good.
Cool.
Sounds perfect.
Guys, thank you so much for joining me. Again, if you have any thoughts about the Castlevania series, send an email to droppedframespod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @droppedframepod. And, you can send us memes or whatever. We're posting on there pretty regularly with our James Marsden related content. And I'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.